Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic.
Amen.
For those of you who wish to, who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have John and Keith. I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 8 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And step 9 is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Page 80. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him.
Who wants to go? Go for it, John.
Don't worry about me.
We'll go ahead.
Hello, everybody. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
I guess you'd have to know a little bit about my relationship with my wife before I can really get into talking a little bit about this. I knew her since eighth grade, so it gives you a little idea how long I've known this lady and how long she's known me and how long she's known me progress through this disease of alcoholism. She got to see it when I was on the fun side, the good side, and everything's great, you know, and then she got to kind of see it, you know, somewhere within our relationship. We were never married. But we, you know, we decided to, you know, have a child out of wedlock, whatever it is. But, you know, I kind of grew up in a religion that, you know, the right thing to do is supposedly get married first, right? But it didn't happen, you know. And at some point in long, you know, probably within maybe, 4 months of her pregnancy, she decided she didn't want to be around me anymore, you know. And the whole plan was is her family to take her off to Florida, and they go down to Florida, and I quit my job somewhere along the line, and boom, I'll go down there and live in Florida with them in Florida land, whatever, you know. Florida always sounds like when you're from the Midwest, you know, I've never been to Florida. Oh, you know, sunny beaches. Oh, wow, I can't wait to go. Well, deep down, after she left, I knew I was never, ever, ever going to go to Florida. It was just one more time I had to get rid of it, her, whatever it may be. And that was my mindset, and I couldn't wait. It just allowed me to drink more and do more drugs. Party more, I didn't have to deal with her, you know. And that was kind of the relationship that I had. We had a very loving relationship. How can you have so much of a relationship, you know? I know I said we started off in eighth grade, but this is like probably maybe 5 years down the road when this kind of built up, you know, and we kind of kept in touch. And what we come to find out is, what I come to find out is I had no clue how to live life. I just know when I drank, I had fun and I had a good time. And she's a very lovely lady, and she's a very lovely lady today, you know. And what I really, really know today is that she has feelings just like I have feelings today. So I have to be really careful in what I do or what I say. And it's not so much for me as being with other women. It's so much sometimes as me just maybe talking to other women certain ways or looking at women in certain ways. I've been there, I've done it, and I got the t-shirt, and I'll continue to get that t-shirt. I've been to the beach many times. It's not like I'm ready to, you know, jump in a relationship, but once again is, you know, this program has taught me how to actually, you know, think of other person's feelings for a change instead of my own. You know, relationships are very difficult, you know, and what I come to find out today is, you know, I'm not going to be a saint at it, and I'm not perfect at it, no matter what I do. So what I have to do is, bottom line, is leave it up to God and allow God to direct my thoughts and actions through thought and prayer, you know. I'm not perfect at it today, you know. Maybe she ain't perfect at it either, but what I come to find out, this is my problem, and I got to take care of my side of the street, right? You know, and when I take care of my side of the street, it seems like our lives seem to be operating a hell of a lot better. You know, I can try to control her all day long, and when I come to find out, it don't work. You know, but that's kind of all I have, and I'll pass on to Keith.
My name is Keith Gillette, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Keith.
And sober today through the grace of God, which I found by taking the steps. You know, what I'm doing is I'm constructing a list. That's all I'm doing right now is I'm constructing how I'm going to go back to these people that I had harmed. You know, we're talking about relations and sex relationships. You know, we took an inventory back in the fourth step, and where I had to identify what my ideals were, and then I found out that I had violated every single ideal that I ever had for a relationship. I definitely aroused bitterness, jealousy, and suspicion in every single, you know, romantic relationship that I had ever been in. Every single one of them. That was a tough pill to swallow. You know, I didn't even know anything was wrong until I took these steps. I just thought this is how I conduct business. You know, this is just what I do. And I was all about how I felt. And I understood at this point why I was doing what I was doing. You know, I was doing it to fulfill, you know, something that alcohol wasn't providing for me. You know, if I wasn't getting ease and comfort, then I sought ease and comfort. And it typically came from another gal. You know, if I was in a relationship, I sought another one. If I didn't feel like I was getting what I needed in one, I would seek another and keep the other one around while I was doing it, just in case. You know, just in case she came around, you know, in spite of the other one that I was pursuing, didn't come out and pan out for me. And so I started making this list, you know, and I'm like, wow, this is awful. You know, I never had long-term relationships, you know, prior to taking this step. They were very short and fast, you know, and they usually got sick and tired of me really quick. But I owed them something. You know, how I conducted myself was that I got in and under their skin. It wasn't like I just one night stood them and met them in a random place. It was typically I got involved with them. Words were exchanged, numbers were. They stayed over my house. I stayed over their house for weeks and weeks and weeks. So I owed them something more than I'm sorry and leave them alone. Sometimes it was in these situations, I made a list of people that I were to stay away from because I had done enough damage to them in their lives. They may have conducted some therapy, or they just got, you know, just thank God they got out of my grips, you know, and they never wanted to see me ever again. I had to write these things down so that when I got to the ninth step that I would remember, hey, leave this person alone. They've seen enough of me. I've done enough damage. And an example of that, you know, not following that was when I first sobered up, I had a high school sweetheart that I literally destroyed her ideals. I mean, she was somebody that from 5 years old, you know, had thought about her wedding day one day and thought about having, I didn't understand that. That was odd to me. I don't, you know, didn't think like that. And, you know, I had cheated on her the entire time that I was with her. Not because I was a cheater, but because I had a need. You know, if I got that need scratched by being a kind, decent human being, then I probably would never have cheated on her if I got the ease and comfort from doing that. But I didn't. And so I cheated on her over and over again. And when I sobered up the first year, I went back to high school. I'll let you know how old I was when I sobered up. And when I got back to school after treatment, I ran immediately up to her and I said, hey, I'm sorry. You know, she goes, for what? And I continued to confess what I was doing in AA. She thought that was remarkable. She goes, oh my God, that's great. I said, well, thank you very much. She goes, I still babysit at such and such place. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. She goes, why don't we hook up again? I'm like, that's a great idea. You know, that's a great idea. I had never taken the steps. I was just there to offer up an apology and who knows what else. And
we all know that.
We all know. We do. But I hadn't taken the steps, so I had no idea. Don't even know I'm lying, right? Denial. So I ended up getting back into this gal's life for another year and destroying it for another year. I made her miss her high school prom. I made her miss her graduation. I made her miss a lot of things. I hadn't changed other than the fact that I wasn't drinking anymore. I was still the exact same person, conducting myself the same way, sober or drunk. Right? When a year later, when I finally took the steps, she made the list, and we had talked about leaving her out of it totally, that I was never to have any contact with her whatsoever. And this is 32 years later, and I've not contacted her. We grew up in the same hometown. My family's friends with her family, but my job is to leave her alone. And because of that, you know, I'm sure her life is just fine. I've heard she has kids. She's happily married, and that's fantastic, you know. But, for these, you know, and I thought, just because you're sober, this is going to stop. This doesn't stop because I'm sober. I have alcoholism, right? This stuff crops up constantly, and if I don't continue to do this, it will continue to happen. So that's all I got for this. Thanks.
Thanks. We're going to continue the reading on page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Mom. Ain't it grand, the wind stopped blowing."
Sure. Again, Keith Gillette, alcoholic. When I did sober up, I came right back to my mother's house. And when I started getting involved with AA and I went through treatment, I thought there should have been a parade as soon as I came home. You know, that's just how far out of left field I was about this, you know, living life deal. I came out of the cyclone cellar thinking, now I'm sober, now everything's great. Everybody should just bow and part and just give me things. And that wasn't it. You know, I again, in sobriety, got kicked out of my mother's house. When she would come to me and say, "Why aren't you working? Why aren't you back at school? Why aren't you producing something? You're eating everything in this house and not contributing anything." Selfish and inconsiderate habits is what had a hold of me. And I treated everybody in my family that way. I lived at home with my mom, brother, and my sister. And I definitely got the most attention, not because I was good, but because I was in a lot of trouble a lot of times. And I demanded everything. I just sobered up. I wasn't doing anything. I didn't have alcohol in my body, and I didn't have Alcoholics Anonymous in my soul. And so I lived like that. I was like a big vacuum in this world. You know, if you would have hooked up an attachment from a vacuum cleaner to my belly button, I would have just walked around sucking everything dry of everything it had in it. You know, that's including relationships, friendships, family members, food and money, everything that I could get my hands on. I engulfed that stuff. You know, and when I would talk to my mom about sobriety, because she was in an Al-Anon program, and she was like, "You know, you're really causing a lot of problems in this family. And you're about 6 months sober, or a year sober, a year and a half sober now." And I said, "Well, at least I'm sober." She goes, "That's not enough. That's not enough." And then you wrote it in your book where it says, "We think a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough." That floored me when I finally opened up the big book and looked at that and said, "Oh my God, that is me. I am such an unthinking human being. I don't consider nobody, because everything that I got inside me is demanding attention and anesthesia. It needs to be anesthetized. And I didn't know that. I needed to take a drink, or I needed to get a relationship with God in my life. But I had none, and I was just looking for everybody else to fulfill that. And they couldn't. You know, when I got done with them, I would discard them. That's how it looked. Like I had just taken out the trash, and I was looking for more trash. And I know that they didn't appreciate that. They didn't appreciate that. And they told me that years later when I finally did make amends to them the right way, after I'd gone through the steps. And it still took a little bit of time for my mom and brother and my sister to come around. It was the year 2000, so it was, 13 years after the fact. And I was speaking at the International Conference of Young People. My mom and my brother and my sister and my newborn daughter were sitting in the front row. And I was like, "Oh my God, you know, now this is starting to come about. Now they're starting to understand that I meant business when I finally made amends, you know." Before, they wouldn't cross the street, you know, to piss on my burning ashes, you know, but here they decided to come make the trek and watch me speak. And that was, I could hardly even speak because I was in tears of how much gratitude this program has provided me. So that's what I got.
Hello, everybody. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic.
John.
Hi, John.
You know, what comes to my mind is that saying, 10 or 20 years of drunkenness will make a skeptic out of anyone. That's including that damn dog, because it took a while for that dog to start coming back around, you know. And it's kind of like that relationship marathon with my mom or my dad or my wife today, or anything that I came across, it seemed like it was either me or the highway, you know. And kind of like what Keith was saying, it's amazing how all of a sudden you get out of treatment, you want to save the world. You got all the answers, the right answers. And I was in treatment, and I had to do 45 days because not only did I drink, I did a lot of drugs, or did a lot of drugs and drink, whatever it may be. And after that, I went into this thing called the three-quarter house, they call them in Illinois, and not halfway houses. And I went in this three-quarter house, three-quarter way house, you know, three-quarters way out to live in the real life, I guess, you know. And but they had rules, just kind of like rules in treatment. But when I got to treatment, I was ready for treatment. I was done. It was it, you know. And and then I started getting a little nervous because, you know, you commence, you graduate, whatever it is, you're off to go out and live in this real world that, you know, yeah, I got to learn how to live again, you know, and without doing drugs or drinking, you know. And I scared shitless and went into this three-quarter way house, and I ended up breaking the rules with her. And, you know, and we both got evicted. She got drunk that day. I didn't. You know, I had no idea, but what I come to find out later on down the road, when the first time I took the steps, is it's amazing how I'm still continuing to ruin people's lives, rather if they're really familiar with me or I know them real well or whatever it may be, you know. And so I kind of, you know, got out of that three-quarter house, came home, and, you know, the first thing I did is made my mom pull out all the Listerine. She's got 33% alcohol. I could get drunk, you know. Once again, I'm still wanting to try to control the whole situation. And, you know, and she did that. And, you know, I have no idea if my mom ever was an alcoholic or she was an alcoholic. But, you know, my dad and I don't know, I was 6 months into the program, whatever it may be. And we conspired a way to get her to treatment, you know. And, you know, we set up with the doctor to take it up to the hospital and, you know, to be seen. And once you be seen, there's an alcoholic ward right next to it. And we had no idea. We didn't tell her there was an alcoholic ward next to it. But from arriving to the hospital and getting on that floor and being seen, she figured out what we were trying to do and to try to put her in the alcohol ward, you know. And I have no idea why, but it's something we conspired and we did. And at this point in time, I realized I never seen my mom so mad a day in my life. Now, I grew up with a loving family. There's five of us, and I'm the baby of the family. I have no idea. I'm the oops baby or whatever it may be, but I was the problem child, that's for sure. And it was like, oh, this is going to be a long ride home, you know. And so what I come to find out is, you know, this disease is cunning, bothering, powerful. And what I have to do is focus on me and take care of my problems and my issues, you know. And once I start looking at me, and that's what these steps are for, is to really start looking, take a look at me. And so I got to clear away some shit, rather if I believe it or not. There's a whole bunch, right? You know, if I had to believe everything, I wouldn't be doing a lot of this stuff, because sometimes I just have to take the action and trust in something greater than myself. And there's a lot of times I have no idea what that is. You know, today I choose to call it God, you know, and I ask for God and I ask for that strength to allow me to be useful for the next person around, you know. You know, when I started making that list of these people I harmed, you know, and obviously there's that financial means with my family, and they didn't want a lick of money. They didn't want that money whatsoever. It probably would have made them more angry if I tried to give them that money. The only thing they said is these living amends they talk about, you know, just stay sober and keep doing what you're doing. They were very proud of me, and they always wanted to toot my horn and always felt uncomfortable. Every Christmas party, hey, we're going to announce you're so many years sober, da, da, da. And I'm like, oh, hell no, right? You know, and because I had no idea how to react to all that. But, you know, somewhere along the line, you know, through getting a sponsor and listening to the sponsor, you know, he taught me, when I go home, why don't you just, you know, do something that you usually don't do, mow the yard, fix the garage, paint the house, whatever it may be. Just be there for them, you know. And what a change, because I spent many days trying to prove my parents wrong, that I'm right, you're wrong, and it never worked. You know, you could never drink, you could never drug. I could never get to that point. And it came to down to, you know, I made this geographical change back in 86 from Illinois to Virginia. And my sister is trying to help me out. And one more time, they were trying to take care of me. They just didn't want me to die from this disease. And I had no idea I had this disease. And they had no idea I had this disease. So I came out here, and, you know, and one more time, I hung out about 30 days, started drinking, realized, boom, 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 you know, here we go again, but this is the first time I was ever introduced to Father Martin and the Chalk Talk tapes. My brother-in-law kind of gave me these tapes. I started listening to them. I think I had a big book and the 24-hour book. And really, I didn't go to no meetings, didn't do any of that stuff. You know, he just gave me these tapes. And that was my first introduction to AA, and I did this AA thing, you know. And I thought I did this AA thing, but after that 30 days, I started drinking again. It just set the ball rolling one more time. The only thing I do is remember is, you know, probably about after a year, I called my dad. And I says, because like I said, I come from this loving family. The door is always, literally always open. I said, Dad, how come you never kicked me out of the house so I learned the hard way? And the only thing this man said to me is, how come I never listened? And he shut the hell up. And he waited for that response. And I was like, oh, shit, one more time, the dagger to the heart, you know, and he bailed me out, you know. And what I come to find out, it ain't no different in AA. I have to learn to listen. You know, I have to learn to listen when I pray. Hopefully I can ask God for that strength and that direction to do the right thing, because relationship today is still very difficult for me. Not that I'm perfect at it, but there's a program that allows me to work through with whatever I'm going through. And it allows me to slow down long enough to maybe think before I act. And it's usually nothing that grand. It's usually I'm about ready to say something really stupid. It's going to be a while before I get out of this one, whatever it may be. But, you know, to me, I can still create the tornado, willingly or unwillingly. There's times when I have no idea I'm doing it, and she reminds me. And there's times when I know I'm doing it. I'll show you. Just because I come to these rooms in Alcoholics Anonymous and take all these grand steps and do all these great things don't make me a perfect person. The only thing it really makes me is a human being, knowing that I'm going to continue to make these mistakes. And this program has allowed me, and these remaining steps are going to allow me to correct that. But we're just at the beginning of really starting to open this door to allow me start to see my faults. What's my part in it, you know? And today, you know, I'm blessed. You know, I have everything that I ever wanted and then some. You know, and there's still times when I just don't know how to deal with it. It's like, wow, why do I have all this? You know, why is there this God in my life? Why am I sitting up here? You know, yeah, I'll come up here, then, you know, probably about an hour before, I'm all basket case, right? So many thoughts going through my mind. What am I going to say? What am I going to do? And the bottom line is I just want to carry to some kind of message that somewhere down the line, whoever's in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous can stop and say, wait a minute, you know, just because I'm thinking it don't mean I'm doing it. You know, and today, you know, there's this program, and I love it, and that'll pass.
All right, we'll continue to read it on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
That's a great one. You know, I like when it says that, and it's been a source of topics, you know, for years that I've been in AA, where it says, you know, that we must take the lead. You know, how long is it, you know, that I take to go ahead and start making amends, or when should I go and start making these amends? You know, the best answer I think I've heard so far was whatever taking the lead means to you. You know, that's none of my business for you. You know, as a sponsor, my job is pretty limited. It tells me on later on page 96 that I'm there to help you make a decision, and I'm there to hear your life story if I'm not going to be affected. And you can go to anybody else for that. And the rest of it, I just offer up practical advice. So however long that takes for you. For me, it meant immediately. It meant that whether it was convenient for me or not convenient, whether I felt good about going and doing this or not, it was just, for me, it was all about the action, not the feelings behind it all. Because I'm an emotional wreck, so how can I really wait for that to start to iron itself out, you know? And I need to make these amends because I owe people stuff. I owe people stuff. I owe them writing the history the best that I can for them, helping them get off the hook that I've put them on. You know, I had to go and immediately called my mother when I got to the ninth step because I was stationed in Hawaii and you didn't have emails, you didn't have Instagram, and you didn't have Facebook and none of this other stuff. It was 88 when I first did this, and I had to make amends. So I called my mom on a payphone, and I remember I was terrified because I was about ready to break the news to her that for all these years that I've been saying I'm sorry that I wasn't, and that I had been so full of crap, and I was so selfish my entire life that I finally realized that how selfish I had been. And I was about ready to tell her what she already knew her whole life, or my whole life. You know, it was no news for her, but I think it was fantastic for her to hear me finally identify that, Mom, I wasn't sorry all those times that I said I was. But I am sorry, and this is what I'm going to do to right these things. You know, this is what I had seen that I had done to you and done to the family, and because of which, this is what I'm going to try to do. You know, and so since that time, since 89, I call my mom every single Sunday. Even though I might talk to her more times in the week, I made an agreement that I was going to call her every single Sunday because I haven't been in Michigan in over 30 years. So that's the only way I can contact my mom is through the phone or email or something like that. And so I do. I've been keeping that going this whole time. There's been a few times, you know, I'm not going to say that I hadn't been deployed a bunch of times and I couldn't do it because of operational duties and requirements, but, you know, I have made that effort. And that has convinced my mom more than anything else that I might tell her is that I've called her, that I've sent her birthday gifts or cards or flowers or, you know, I've been present in my mother's life. You know, she didn't want me to keep the money anymore. She didn't want me to pay back the money that I had owed her. And that's another funny thing, is that when she told me I didn't owe her anything other than to continue to do what I'm doing, I thought I got off and that I could keep the money. That was like $50 extra in my pocket a month. For a guy that was making $450 a month anyways in the military back then, that's a lot of money. And my sponsor said, that's not your money. You owe it. And so I had to do other things that I'm not going to talk about tonight, but you know, I paid back financially to my mother. I've ripped off many of her roofs and re-roofed her house. I've shoveled snow off of her roof. I've built her decks, you know, not because, you know, I owe it to her, but because I'm her son. You know, I made amends to her. Now I owe it to her to be her son. You know, and that's more difficult than going back and righting the wrongs, I think. Because my mom doesn't always say cool things. You know, she says some things that I disagree with. And that's when I have to get into the asking God, you know, my creator, to help me with patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. When she says things that I disagree with totally, it's none of my business to correct my mother. My job is to be her son, which I knew nothing of or little of. You know, over these years, I think I've become a good son to her. There's a woman that gets on a plane and comes and visits me 4 times a year, you know, bar none, without any question, without hesitation. She opens up her house to me and my family all the time, you know, and I leave her house in better condition than I arrived in because of what you guys have taught me, because of the amends, because of what she taught me. I don't talk to my mother about spiritual matters. You know, I'm her son. I'm not there to instruct her. You know, she's believed in God longer than I ever believed in God. She's been living a spiritual life long before I ever thought of a spiritual life. You know, and when I sit back and I listen to my mother, sometimes I learn. I definitely have learned from my great-grandmother, who passed away at 104 years old. I remember going up to her and showed her my my 20-year medallion. And she goes, "What is that?" From Poland. And I said, "This is my 20-year medallion, great-grandma." She goes, "So do they have a 90-year-old coin?" I said, "90? What do you mean?" She goes, "I haven't drank my whole life, and I am 90. She goes, "It's no big deal that you don't drink." I was like, wow. That's something. It is no big deal. You're not supposed to drink by doing Alcoholics Anonymous. If you do AA, you're not supposed to drink. This is a method of success. You know, and I'm so fortunate. More recent than long ago, I've taken the steps a bunch of times in my current marriage. And as soon as my wife's name made the list, I immediately went to her, and she didn't want to hear about it. And I went to talk to her about what I had done, misunderstandings or arguments that I'd done in the past. I went to talk to her about it. She goes, "I don't want to hear about it." And I have to respect that. You know, it didn't get me off the hook. I got the chance to act like a good husband and say, "Okay," and do the dishes and vacuum the floors, you know, and do what I'm supposed to do. It doesn't make me special. You know, I have to respect people that don't want to hear it from me, though. And my brother's the same way. He hasn't, wanted to hear my amends ever. He just wants me to be a good brother. And I think I've been doing that. So that's all I got right now.
You know, I like this part where here it says patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. You know, when I first came to these rooms, I can tell you right now, I was the most impatient person I ever thought of. I could never sit still. I was probably that guy that probably should have been on ADHD medicine. I was the guy that sat in that classroom and heard the concert outside the doors and everybody talking about what was going on. And as far as tolerance, kindness, and love, for me, the tolerance came as long as I was getting my way. It seemed like everything was okay. I could tolerate things that were around me. I was tolerating people around me. And the kindness and love, to me, that's something that's actually, I think, for the most part, we live it every day, but there's outside things that go on that takes us away from that. You know, and it puts us in these positions where anger and resentment and fear crop up. And I'm not so tolerant anymore, and I'm not so loving no more, and I'm not so kind no more. I can remember when I first got married, I was trying to figure out this marriage deal, right? And talked to my sponsor, and I've been through the steps and asked all the right questions, whatever it may be. And I finally married this woman that I knew since eighth grade. We had a young daughter together, I was meeting all these needs. I was taking care of my responsibility. I decided to join the Navy, so I can have a solid career and a solid paycheck. I was paying child support for a change, and I didn't have to be that deadbeat dad that I never ever wanted to be in the first place. So I had to pay that child support every month. So I'm trying to live up to all these expectations and do the right thing. I'm trying to set this example, but just because I'm getting married and trying to live with this woman doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect. And now I'm starting to live a different way of life. I'm starting to come home pissed off, not how to react. Anger is creeping back up, and it's amazing when you ask your sponsor, and talk about these things, maybe you should stop and just say a quick little prayer before you walk through that door and allow the God to direct your thoughts and actions instead of you trying to direct your thoughts and actions. And that's how it started off at the very beginning. And what I come to find out, that's still how it is today. And I'm like going, wow, it's not that I ever want to be mean or angry or upset with her. I just want to be that person that my parents always wanted me to be. That kind little Johnny boy, right? Do the right next thing, And when I think I'm doing the right next thing, I have no idea if I'm doing it or not, But I had to come to these rooms to learn how to live a different way of life, And And just because I'm doing these things don't mean I'll be perfect at it. So, you know, I think we was married for like about 6 months and life was getting really uglier, you know, and I'm like trying to figure out this marriage thing. And she asked me to leave the house for a while, you know, and she got my command involved, and, you know, and they come knocking, you know, they call me into the office, and I never get called in the office because I'm this stellar sailor that does all the right things and shows up to work and get all these awards and whatever and going to AA and taking people to AA and helping all these people out. And next thing you know, I'm getting called to the command master chief's office, and he looks at me and he goes, you're moving out of your house for 30 days. You're going to Keys to Love and Relationship and Anger Management class, right? And I'm like going, oh, shit, yeah, your wife just called me. And so God speaks through other people, believe it or not. And that was a good time for me to wake up and smell the roses and go, wait a minute, I need to do something there. And it's not that I was hitting this lady or anything. I was just being a real military ass at this point in time. It's my way or the highway kind of deal. And so I'm learning how to live life. But she had enough gall to know to hang it out. And she knew what to do. It's like, damn, man. Where's this patience, tolerance, kindness, love, you know? To be a maximus for God and people around me. I don't know all this. I just remember reading at some point in time to hear other people say it at meetings, and I just went through the steps, and I'm starting to feel really good about what's going on in my life. But she ain't. I'm like, damn, man. And going to a bunch of meetings and doing all this. And so I come to find out, I do this deal, and I move out and for 30 days and go to these classes, and I don't remember what I learned, but I went through these classes, and somewhere in between all this, the AA conference was about ready to happen in Hawaii. And Keith knows this guy, I can't remember, Manuel or whatever, is showing up. Well, this guy probably had 40 years back then. This guy, you know, I've never met this guy, but my sponsor wanted me to introduce this guy to me, right? You know, and now I'm thinking I'm about ready to meet Moses here, you know, and we get all the answers I need to know, and this guy's all wonderful, you know, 40 years sobriety. And he introduces me to him, and he goes, yeah, this is John. You know, he's going through relationship problems with wife. His wife wants to leave. And now I'm waiting for the answer. I'm waiting for the ultimate answer to help me with my relationship because I'm not ready to bury it. I'm not ready to get a divorce. And the guy just looks at me, and he goes, you know, to be useful is your only aim. Did you ask her if she needed help packing your bags? And I'm like, what the hell is this, right? You know, I'm not going to go home and ask my wife if she needs help packing her bags. And that was pretty much the end of the conversation. You know, this guy that has 40 years has no more answer than I do. You know, he just says, you need to be useful. You know, and if she does want to leave, it's your responsibility. If she does need help packing her bags, I guess you need to help pack her bags. But I ain't going to go home and say this, you know. And so the program of Alcoholics Anonymous can bring many different joys to your life, pains, and all this good stuff. And when I... just as long as I shoot up and show up and be at the right place at the right time. And usually if you're in a convention or an AA meeting or with your sponsor, to me, you know, you're in the right spot. And relationships still today, like I said earlier, you hear it, they're still difficult to me, you know. There's times when I want to jump ship. You know, if you asked me 3 years ago, I probably got divorced 50 million thousand times. But I didn't get divorced, but damned if I didn't want to, right? Because I want the easier, softer way, and knowing that that's not the easier, softer way, I'm just full of anger and resentment and fear. And these all crop up when I wrote this all down, when I started doing these steps, and I realized how angry I was. I was a very angry individual. I was angry at her. I was angry at everybody. For the most part, I was just angry because I decided to go out and do something stupid. You know, I have all these years of sobriety, and you want to trash it down the thing because you want to do what you want to do. You know, I don't even have to pick up the drink to be that way. You know, all I got to do is quit praying, quit asking God for these directions, quit doing these steps. And when I stop doing these simple things, you know, all I got to do is I can tell. You know, well, hey, ain't you going to the meeting tonight? My wife's really good at this right now. She's lived with me for almost 30 years. You know, don't you need a meeting? Aren't you going to a meeting? You know, and she's very loving at it, you know. And so anyway, today, the more I do this, the more I start living it, the more I start acting it. And I definitely can't shove this down her throat. This ain't her disease. This is my disease. And when I live it and when I do it, she likes being around me.
And it's just like the dog. The dog likes being around me. It doesn't start running as soon as I'm going to drop the F-bomb. But anyway, I'll shut up. Next.
Thanks, John. The reading continues on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
I like this. It talks about, you know, sometimes you're not going to be able to fully write these things, you know, as long as you're ready to, it tells me. And if I'm ready to, and that person or that thing does not exist anymore, you know, and I'm absolutely, and I'm the only one that knows this. I am the only one that knows if I'm fully capable and fully ready to right the wrongs that I'm ready to do. It doesn't have to meet your approval or my sponsor's approval or my wife's approval or my family's approval. If I know deep down that if this person was sitting here, would I do it? Without hesitation, you know, the answer was always yes. I sponsored a gentleman that had done something horrible, that there was absolutely no way he could write this. You know, that individual no longer, you know, was living, and he had told me about it. And it happened when he was about 9 years old, and he was 29 when I met him, and he had drank almost every single day to try to blot out that intolerable situation as best he could. You know, he tried to drink himself to death over these things, what had happened that day. And I met him in Hawaii, and he comes over to me and he asks me for some help. And he was just, you know, he was ghost white and shaky, and you know, obviously he was just detoxing, but there was something more than just that. It was just a deadness in him. And he was married and he had children. And about a week later, we went through the steps, and he had confessed what had happened, and it was something that I had never experienced myself. And I had no experience whatsoever, nor did I know anybody that did. And it was time, and he wanted to know how to make amends for what he had done. And I said, I don't know, but I know a guy who sponsors lots of people of different backgrounds and different situations. And if you're all right with me asking, I would love to, for you. And so I called this gentleman in California, and he had sat us both down on the phone, and he said, well, listen, you took a life, and you can never give that back. But what you can do is you can adopt. You can adopt, or you can give two lives back for the one you took. He goes, and this is what I suggest. And he suggested this gentleman adopt two children over in Burma, and you know, through that UNICEF thing. And so he did. He got online, or he got on, went to the base chapel and found out how to do that. And he had adopted two children over there, and made payments, you know, for their education and their medical. It wasn't that much, but you know, it was enough to, you know, satisfy and facilitate that those two kids. And this kid did this long enough. They were, one was 9 and one was 7, and he did the one kid for 10 years. And flew over there for his graduation in high school. And then he flew over a year and a half later for the other kid's graduation from high school. And when he did, he showed up with a check to pay for their college, for both of their college, the second time he went over there. You know, he gave two children that would probably have starved to death and had no education whatsoever, and he helped bring those. Did it erase what he had done? Absolutely not. You know, but that kid became a phenomenal father and a phenomenal husband. And he could actually, after he left, you know, that weekend, he walked around like he had a God, and he didn't need to crawl before nobody. He didn't need to answer up to you or anybody else. He was doing the deal. And that's what making amends started to do for me. It allowed me to walk around like a decent human being and actually feel what that meant. I'd never known what that meant. I had people all the time walking up to me and say, "You walk like you got the weight of the world on your shoulders." And I'm like, "Absolutely, how do you know this?" I never looked up. I was always on my belly crawling, you know, around. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. You know, I didn't feel like I could measure up in any situation. Even though I might have been better at something than you were better at in the end. And I knew that. You know, so I always felt less than. He treated me special, I felt average. He treated me average, I feel less than. But after taking this step, I didn't no longer feel that way. You had no more better chance than I did. And you were no more closer to God than I was. And you weren't going to stay sober any better than I was going to stay sober. You know, and that's a nice feeling. You know, so turn it over to John.
You know, I remember when I did my fourth and fifth step and left no stone unturned, right? I went on a trip out to Washington State and for work, and I met this guy out there I knew out in Hawaii in the 90s, and his name was Huggin' Harold. And Huggin' Harold, I think, is an Indian, I do believe, but he's probably got a good 60 years sober now. But this guy took me through the steps when I first started, not all of them, but I could never figure out how to get through these steps, right? And this guy would sit down with me every time I'd see him at the treatment center in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. And he'd sit down with me every time and go, "We'd do 1, 2, 3. He'd go, "Now go out and do 4. And I'd come back and see him a couple weeks later. We'd sit down and do 1, 2, 3. "Now go out and do step 4. Well, anyway, this guy was very loving. He always had this personality where you always want to be next to this guy. There's just something like, man, this guy has got this spirit going on, this God thing going on, whatever it may be, but you love being around him. But so I go out in Washington State, and he was out there. And so I got to see him and talk to him and everything, and I had to tell him my sobriety date, you know. And you know, some things, you know, more will be revealed, I guarantee you. If you don't honestly do this program, sooner or later it's going to come out, and you're going to have to, or you're going to get this gut wrench thing right here where you ain't going to be able to get rid of. And somewhere along the line, alcohol and drugs are going to have to remove that shit, and I just don't want to go back to where I'm going. And so I had to tell this guy my sobriety bait, and I couldn't lie to this guy, but I lied to this guy. Oh, well, right? But I couldn't live with it, and this guy's sitting there, and I said, "Now my sobriety date's actually July. It's not January, da, da, da." And now I'm all in a turmoil, like, shit, now I got to call my sponsor, and there's some other people out there in Hawaii I'm talking to, and it really wasn't a big deal. It was just my sobriety date needed to be changed, right? And it was like 6 months, And the other guy that I was with, he goes, "You remember what day it was?" I go, "Nah, it's somewhere in July." He goes, "Hell, just pick a date and let's keep moving forward, right?" And that's pretty much what it was, you know. So, guy, you know, this level of honesty is not me being honest with you. It's me learning how to be honest with myself. And the more I'm honest with myself, the more I can allow that God in my life to creep on in. Because I'm still a lying, cheating thief, and I still want to do what the hell I want to do, right? And I'll plow over everything and anything, no matter how spiritual I think I am or not. You know, and these steps allows me to get that God, that fundamental idea in my God in my life. And through this process of making amends, it kind of grows just a little bit more. You know, and we're going to talk about it here pretty soon, you know, and these promises are going to creep in, rather if you like it or not. So, you know, I had to get honest, and, you know, I had to call him, tell him it was no big deal, and I came back, changed my sprite, and kept moving on, right? You know, so what I come to find out is, right, if you don't get it right at the very beginning, sooner or later it's going to crop up, and you're going to have to write it down. You're going to have to get rid of it, you know. And so what I do today is, you know, I try to live a simple, pretty simple program, and because I have to today. If I try to exaggerate it or make it bigger than what it is, I'm just going to screw it all up, you know. I'm going to have to make these amends. And when I was out there, there's a lot of things going on. I know we're cutting short, but, you know, I've never been put in a position where I wanted to ever cheat on my wife before, but this time it was there, and it was like, oh shit, man, I'm like scared shitless, right? And
I don't know why all these women just want me to get in her car, but I ain't getting in this car. And I'm having all these friggin' wrong thoughts. And rather if I should be telling you this or not, but the greatest gift I has is I had enough AA people around me to share this, what was going on. You know, and sooner or later, somehow or another, they quit talking to me. I was just fine with me. And I'm not trying to say I'm a saint, but I just knew I didn't want to cheat on my wife. And the reason why, when I came back from that trip for 2 months, 2 days later, my wife's father passed away, and I can just imagine if I cheated on her, and then I come home and realize that her dad just passed away, and now I got to deal with all that, and because that's a whole different evolution in itself, you know, and had, so we had to go to California, or to Colorado, and, you know, deal with her dad's passing in the whole nine yards. What I love about this is it gave me an opportunity to make some more amends, you know, and because there's some harms I've done out there years ago. I never made them the first time I got sober, you know. One was a restaurant and the other one was a grocery store. Went to the grocery store, stole a bunch of steaks many years ago. Here's some money. I don't know how much it is. Hopefully, it, he goes, you're not the only person who's ever come in and done this, and gave me the thumbs up. And it's like, oh, shit. And then I'm going over the bar. I stole a bunch of lobsters, tucked them down my pants. And what I come to find out, it's not a bar no more. It's a Korean restaurant or a Chinese restaurant. And so I was going to go make amends there and give him some money. And I was like, shit, it's not a bar no more. So I didn't know what to do. I had to call him. So I called my sponsor. He goes, well, go in and buy somebody a meal, a couple meals. So I go in and buy a couple meals to make these amends. And because I'm taking these simple actions. Well, now there's a communication barrier because they have no idea what I'm trying to do. I'm in there trying to explain to them, and they're getting me pissed off now because I'm just trying to make these amends because I want to live the right way of living, right? It tells me this is what I need to do. This is pretty simple, but you ain't understanding. But sooner or later, they got the message. They got somebody else out of the kitchen. I was like, I'm just trying to buy a couple lunches here, you know, and I don't care who, and da-da-da. And so they finally figured it out, and I was able to buy a couple meals and go about my business. And what I come to find out, a gift of being able to go out and do those amends is my wife got to ask, you know, how did your amends go, you know? You know, and it got me a little bit away from her, give her time to grieve and do what I need, what she needed to do, and gave me time to do what I need to do. So these living actions are proof. They do work, you know, but like I said, I'm not perfect at it. I just have to suit up, show up, and I know we're getting close, so that's all I got.
All right, we're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it did previously. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety is important. Calling the proper authorities does not go against any AA traditions and is recommended when someone may have broken the law or endangered the safety of another person. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? This group has supper and a speaker Monday, March 16th at 6 p.m. There is a potluck supper, and at 7 p.m. there is a speaker meeting. The speaker is Trent S., formerly of Virginia Beach, now from the Outer Banks. That is Monday, March 16th.
All right. We got one. We had our annual birthday coming up April 3rd, Friday at 7:04. Meeting starts at 6, be a little potluck, bring a dish if you wish type thing, you know, whatever it is. And I don't know if we're doing a speaker or toss the ball around or whatever, but that is April 3rd, Friday at 7:04.
All right, any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Yes. Missy. Hi, Missy. Welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else? Well, welcome.
Welcome.
Good
lady.
To have you. All right, there is literature available on the table over here. The brochures and pamphlets are free. The books are at cost. See one of the home group members if you would like to purchase one. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we please thank John and Keith again for coming?
John. Stay sober for another night at least.
Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation held on the steps discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. Will someone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs? Jessica.
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 Hey, Jessica.
All right, we have a nice way of closing. You're dead. You really did. Our Father.
Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.